We've been through a lot over the last 2 years. I remember thinking in 2020, wow, we've never been through something like this before. This is bad, and how are we going to get through this? You know, and we got through with prayer and faith, and then 2021 hit, and it was worse. I mean, according to cases just in our county, three times worse. And yet, here we are almost at the end of the year, and God has got us through, and I just wanted to thank you as the congregation because you gave one another grace during this period, and you're still giving one another grace. And that's really what was happening, just giving one another grace. There was no way we were all going to agree on every detail of everything going on in the world. Everyone's immune system is different. Everyone's in a different place in life. It was not easy. But you gave one another grace. And really, that's through prayer, through giving one another grace, through God's help, we're making it through. We're in a series on the wisdom for the storms of life, and it seems like we're either just entering a storm, or we're in the middle of one, or we're just getting out of one. And so we started with why study the book of Ecclesiastes. We looked at seven reasons why. Secondly, we looked last week at the wisdom of Solomon, and now we're just going to look at the main point. Before we unpack this book, we're just going to look at the main point. What is the main point of Ecclesiastes? Solomon's going to present a problem, he's going to discover the solution, and then we're going to look at the realization. We're all on a search. Solomon was on a search. And we're all on this search. It's a search for meaning, for happiness, for fulfillment. And we're all sharing this search. And Solomon was on that search as well. And so what happens, though, is a lot of times we're searching for meaning, we're searching for fulfillment, for happiness, in the wrong place or in the wrong way. And what happens is we end up finding the wrong thing, and then we get discouraged. For example, the perfectionist trap. If I'm perfect, then my life will be perfect. That's the perfectionist trap. The performance trap. If I meet certain standards, then I'll feel good about myself and other people will look up to me. The performance trap. The approval trap. You know, if people approve of me, then I'll have meaning and fulfillment and happiness. The attention trap. You know, if people's attention is on me, then my self-worth is based on other people's attention. And what happens is we mix all these things up, among others, these are just some, and we come up with this formula like my performance plus other people's opinions equals true happiness. And it just doesn't work that way. But this is just the culture that we were raised in. I remember when we first moved up, I started working at a print shop. We were in the prepress business. So we didn't do the printing, but we did all the preparation work for it. And so I was in a department, and they asked me to be the manager for this department. And each department had a manager. And then we had a shop manager, and then, you know, and then a boss above that, and then a boss above that. Well, they gave pagers to the managers. They gave pagers that sounded just like that to the managers. And the managers got pagers. Does everybody remember pagers?
Yes.
That's going back a ways. Well, all the managers got pagers but me. I didn't get a pager. And I remember asking my shop manager, I'm like, the managers got pagers, but I didn't get one. And I felt kind of put out, like, oh, I guess I'm not as important as the other managers because I didn't get a pager. And he said, just be glad you don't have a pager. He said, this pager is an umbilical cord to the company, and you can't get away. They can call me day or night, even on weekends, and I have to come in to the shop on my own time and fix the problem. And okay, that helped when he said that, but I still felt put out. And but looking back, my department was like at the beginning of the workflow. I mean, we were at the start of the workflow. Our work was. By the time it finished our department, it went into another department, then another department, then another department. So deadlines didn't even affect, I mean the crunch deadlines didn't actually affect our department. And it made sense that if there's only money for a few pagers, it makes sense not to give it to me. I'm at the front end of the operation where emergencies aren't really going to affect us, whereas the emergencies are going to come later towards the deadline. And so, but of course, I took it personal, you know, even though it wasn't personal. And it's just so funny that my self-worth was based on whether I got a pager or not. I mean, nobody even wants a pager. Most people don't even know what a pager is anymore. It's so silly. But anyway, you get the idea. Solomon is conducting a search. He wants to know what brings true meaning, true fulfillment, true happiness. And it's a search that we all share, and that's why this book is in the Bible. It's so that we can understand this from the start. Let's take a look. We're going to look at the problem first. The problem is that there is no true meaning, fulfillment, or happiness without God. That's the problem. Now, it's not a problem, but it is a problem because we're going to search for it without God anyway. That's what makes it a problem. So, for example, we're going to search in the wrong ways. That is, without God. Now, you may not think that, but here's how it's going to play out. I'm going to figure this out myself. I'm going to do this myself. I'm going to accomplish this by myself. You see the problem there? I'm going to do all of this by myself. I'm going to find happiness by myself. I'm going to find fulfillment and meaning by myself without God. And then what happens when I fail? Then what happens? Now I'm crushed. Now I'm discouraged. Now I'm defeated. Now I've got depression. Now I've got despair. Because God did not create me to find these things by myself. But that's just the way we do it. We got to do it by myself. I got to do this on my own. And that's how I do it. And therefore, it ends up in defeat. It ends up as a burden. And so Solomon did the same thing, searching in all the wrong ways without God. And he came to the conclusion that all things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. It's never enough. So, that's the first mistake. We're searching in the wrong ways. The second mistake is we're searching in all the wrong places. We're searching under the sun without God. We were searching in the wrong way without God. Now we're going to search in the wrong place without God. And this is exactly what Solomon did. Look in Ecclesiastes. Chapter 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 1. And notice what Solomon says here. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1, beginning in verse 12. He says, I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. And I set my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven, this burdensome task God has given to the sons of man, by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under heaven, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. I commune within my heart, saying, look, I've attained greatness, and I have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is grasping for the wind. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. Solomon was searching in all the wrong places under the sun without God. And he found out that everything was temporary. It was not lasting. So, for example, everything apart from God fails to fully satisfy the human heart. So he goes on this search. And he finds that all worldly things, they don't last. They fail to fully satisfy the human heart. Human achievements fail. Knowledge and wisdom of the world fails. The pursuit of pleasure fails. Great accomplishments fail. The brevity and the inequality of life. Work fails. Wealth and riches fail. Eventually they all fail. They don't fully satisfy. And so this is what happens when you're searching basically in all the wrong ways and in all the wrong places. Guess what happens? You're going to end up in frustration. You're going to get so frustrated. Have you ever just lost something? You lost it, and it's really important. It's your keys or your wallet. And you're searching through the whole house, and you're searching everywhere, and you can't find it. You got to be somewhere at a particular time. You remember how frustrating that is? That's what happens in life. If you're searching and searching in all the wrong places and searching in all the wrong ways, you're never going to find what you're looking for, and you're going to get frustrated. And it leads to despair. And that's why the word vanity is used in this book so many times. It's used 35 times in 29 verses. This word vanity is not like a single translation. It's actually translated in a number of different ways. And it helps to recognize this. This is like a multidimensional metaphor. Okay, it doesn't have just one meaning. So for example, this Hebrew word hevel, that's usually translated vanity, it's also translated breath or vapor or fleeting. So for example, in Psalms 144:4, man is like a breath. His days are like a passing shadow. So here it's talking about how hevel is like a vapor. It's fleeting, like James. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. I never really fully grasped why the Bible would say this, because the Bible tells you, you know, God gives man 70 years, and if by reason of strength, 80. But even those 80 years are like a vapor. They're like a shadow. When you think in terms of eternity, when you think in terms of a million years from now, 10 million years from now, 100 million years into eternity, when you look in terms of eternity, yes, your life is just a vapor. It's like that short. In terms of eternity, it is that short. And so that is how this word sometimes is translated. It's also translated idols or nothing or useless. And in that sense, it's talking about how people think these idols are going to protect them or give them meaning or give their life significance, and they can't. And so in that sense, hebel is like nothing or useless. It's vain. It also means meaningless or emptiness or futility. And so if you're reading in the NIV, the NIV uses the word meaninglessness. You have to remember, keep that in context. When Solomon says all of life is meaningless, he's not saying all of life is meaningless. God created life. That in itself gives it meaning. What he's saying is life under the sun, life without God, is meaningless. Emptiness, futility. And then, of course, most translations just translate it vanity. I believe that this passage here kind of gives us the broader view of the word. Ecclesiastes 2:11. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. So the idea of grasping for wind, imagine running around trying to grasp wind. It's just empty. It's futile. It's just going to end in frustration. You're just going to wear yourself out. You're literally going to wear yourself out to the point of exhaustion and then be disappointed. And that's what chasing the wind is like. And that's what chasing happiness or fulfillment apart from God is like. Eventually, you're going to wear yourself out and you're just going to fall into despair. And that's happening all around us. That's why this book, although it was written over 3,000 years ago, is pertinent to our generation today. Because it's trying to tell us, if you're going to chase the wind and try to find happiness and fulfillment apart from God, it's going to fail. You can't get there from here. You're going to wear yourself out. You're going to get exhausted. And you're just going to give up. You're going to get to a place where you actually hate life. Solomon did it. He got to the place where he just hated life. Because he was looking in all the wrong ways, in all the wrong places. So, that brings us to the solution that true meaning and fulfillment and happiness can only be found in God. So the problem brings us to the solution. Now, Solomon spent years immersed in his work, trying to find meaning and happiness through the things of the world. And he was trying to find significance. Think about finding significance as a geopolitical leader. Solomon was a geopolitical leader. Trying to accomplish something great. Trying to make a name for himself. Trying to impress important people. And he had so much vast wealth and vast wisdom and vast possessions, you'd think that that would be enough. And yet it wasn't. The search just actually became a burden for him. It took Solomon a lifetime of searching and carrying a burden to realize that without God, all things fail to satisfy the human heart. Death and destruction are never satisfied, neither are human eyes. Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. A paraphrase of that is, those who love money will never have enough. How meaningless to think that wealth brings true happiness. It slips through our fingers, right? Well, it's not just wealth people set their hopes on. There's a whole number of different things. It's not just money. Money's just one thing of hundreds. But these things all fail because all things fail to satisfy the human heart. There was a meeting you've probably heard of. It was in 1923. And it was a meeting at the Edgewater Hotel in Chicago in 1923. Nine of the most powerful people in America were at this meeting. So at the meeting was the president of America's largest steel company, president of America's largest utility company, president of America's largest gas company, president of the New York Stock Exchange, president of the Bank of International Settlements, also was the nation's greatest wheat speculator, the nation's greatest Wall Street speculator, the head of the world's greatest monopoly, and a member of President Harding's own cabinet. And they were all at this meeting in 1923. Some of the most successful businessmen of the era. And yet, their lives drastically changed because of 1929. There was a market crash. And so these men in 1923 ruled the world, you know, figuratively, metaphorically speaking. But 25 years later, four of the men died completely broke. One went insane. Two were in prison. And two committed suicide. Just in 25 years, they went from the top to the bottom. Because that's how empty, how fleeting this world can be. So Solomon, in his research, he identifies 18 things that are vain in his search. And this was a multi-year search. All the works of men chasing after the wind. Pleasure, the profit from one's labor slips through the fingers. Or when you pass away, somebody else gets the money and who knows if they've got wisdom. Focus on earthly accomplishments, chasing after the wind. Wrong understanding of life and living. Competition. Isn't that crazy to think? A person could live their whole life in denial. Seriously. You could actually live an entire lifetime on earth in total denial. How does that happen? It happens every day. Every day. Talk about chasing the wind. Competition. Stockpiling riches. Trying to please everyone. Have you ever tried that? Trust me, it doesn't work. Foolish use of words and promises. Money. Having wealth but failing to properly use it. Being able to use words masterfully, you know, eloquence. Associating with those who do not think soberly about life. Man's attitude towards evil. The system of justice and retribution. How many times has a court case gone unfair? Right? Because we live in a broken world with corruption. The desire to retrieve the past. That's chasing after the wind. You can't undo the past. It's done. You have to move on. And then death itself. Solomon lists all of 18 of these things as vain, futile, empty, chasing the wind. All of these things, you know, without God. This is one of the misunderstandings of the book of Ecclesiastes. It comes across as depressing because all the things we put our hopes in ends up not being giving us happiness. Yeah, that can be depressing until you find out that they were never intended to give you happiness. That was never their point. True meaning and happiness can only be found in God because He has placed eternity in your heart. I believe chapter 3, verse 11 is a key passage to unlocking the entire book. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, He has put eternity in their hearts. Except that no one can fight out the work that God does from beginning to end. We were placed in this world, and we weren't here at the beginning of the world, and we're not here at the end of the world. We're stuck in this one place in time. And so we have a limited view, a limited perspective. And yet God put eternity in your heart, which means you instinctively know there is something bigger. There's something greater. There's something more important. Why would you know that? Because God put it in your heart. The way trout can spend 2 years in the ocean and come up a tributary and know the exact place they were born. God put that in them. And a bird that does a migration, no one told it where to go. But they go on a migration from the Bering Strait all the way to an island in the South Pacific. Their parents had left before they did. And nobody told the parents where to go. But then the siblings go, and then they find the same island. And if the wind is off even just a few degrees, it throws off their trajectory where they wouldn't find the island, but they knew which island to go to. God put that in them. And God put something in you that would cause you to search and search and search until you found God. He put that inside you. He put eternity in your heart. And that's why we try to fill it with all these other things. And it won't work. There is a God-shaped vacuum in the heart of every man which cannot be filled by any created thing, but only by God, the Creator, made known through Jesus. We have a God-shaped void, a God-shaped vacuum that is infinitely deep because it can only be filled by an infinite God. You can stuff it with all kinds of stuff, but it will never fully satisfy because you weren't made for that. You were made for something greater. You were made for a relationship with God. And so that's why these other things are going to fail to fully satisfy. This explains some of what Jesus was saying when he said, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled." There's an emptiness that we're seeking to be filled. We're hungering and we're thirsting for righteousness. And then Jesus answered and said to her, the woman at the well, "Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life." He put eternity in your heart so that God himself can dwell there and commune with your spirit, and that you could have eternal life. And in eternal life, everything that we were wanting, that meaning and that fulfillment and that happiness we were looking for, God will supply. He gives that to us. It takes time to find it, you know, and it takes time to work through these things. Let's just look at three realizations. Living by faith with wisdom from God empowers us to face the storms of life and find true meaning, fulfillment, and happiness in Him. Realization number one, only God is the source of true wisdom and joy. The things of this world were never intended to be the true source of joy. Now, they are there to help us, and we can appreciate them. And honestly, we might go crazy if we weren't working with our hands. You know, we need to put our mind on something. God gave us work to do. So it's not that work is bad. It's just that there's something more important than that, right? Maybe we would go crazy if we weren't working with our hands or being productive in some way. Only God is the source of true happiness and joy. So think about it this way. To search for it without God is to search in the wrong way. To search for it in the world is to search for it in the wrong place. And to search for it in the wrong way and in the wrong place only leads you to a point of despair, disappointment, which is actually the very opposite of what you're trying to find, right? So Solomon is trying to give you a lifetime of wisdom to say, look, you don't have to do this. You don't have to get to the point where you hate life. Okay, you can avoid that. So, do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Of his own will he brought us forth by the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. So, Solomon is, this book is here so that you don't have to waste a lifetime reaching to the point where you just hate life. You can know that if you're searching without God, or if you're searching under the sun without God, you're searching in the wrong ways and in the wrong places. You're just not going to find it there. Realization number two is the things of this world were never the source of true happiness and joy. And that's not to say that there's not good things or happy things still in the world. We were driving out in Weimar, and this was after the lockdown. You know, everybody had been cooped up in their houses, and we're driving out in Weimar, and it just happens to be a sunny day, and the sky's blue, and I look over, and there's a little baseball game going on. And it's like 9-10-year-old kids playing baseball, and the parents are in the stands. And I was like, see, Kaylee, there's still good left in the world. Look at that baseball game over there. And she says, oh, you mean like parents yelling at their kids and yelling at the umpires? I'm like, that's not exactly what I was talking about, no. But my point is this. There is some happiness and there is some meaning and joy in the world, but it's fleeting and it fails and it leaves us empty and it's complicated, right? It's mixed. It's not all good. It's not all bad. There's a mixture of both. And it makes me sad when I think of this broken world. This headline came out just recently. Facebook documents show how toxic Instagram is for teens, Wall Street Journal reports. They had been doing their own internal research, Facebook had, and the story said, one internal Facebook presentation said that among teens who reported suicidal thoughts, 13% of British users and 6% of American users traced the issue to Instagram. 32% of teen girls said that when they felt bad about their bodies, Instagram made them feel worse. The researchers reportedly wrote, Facebook also reportedly found that 14% of boys in the U.S. said Instagram made them feel worse about themselves. What's going on here? When we compare ourselves to what's unattainable, we're going to be disappointed. And that's what's happening in a large part for young people who don't have the wisdom yet to sort it all out. And so what they're seeing would be like, I'll just use myself. Let's say I'm an awkward teen and I've got acne and I've got red hair and big ears and nobody likes me. I'm not talking about myself, of course, but and then I'm comparing myself to the perfect people, the beautiful people, the people who are in all the right groups. And now I'm comparing myself to them, but I'm still in an awkward teen stage. So in my 12-year-old brain, I have no future. I have no hope. You see, I can't have what they have. How would that affect a young teen in an awkward stage in life? Yeah. Well, because we compare ourselves to something unattainable, did you know that even people who others think are perfect, like they're a 10, they don't think of themselves as perfect. What do they see? They see flaws in themselves. You see, it's unattainable. Even when we look at what we think that person is perfect, that person has everything, it's unattainable. It's like we mentioned before, Instagram influencers. This girl on a yacht in the Greek islands, and this picture perfect, vacation. And then she gets home, and her friend says, "Wow, our friend's a little jealous." It's like, "Wow, you really have quite the lifestyle of the rich and famous." And I saw that picture of you, on the yacht in the Greek islands, and her friend says, "Yeah, my husband and I, we just got in a fight over how much this whole trip was costing." And you don't see it in the picture, but we had just had a big fight, a big argument. It's because what's portrayed, the picture perfect life that's portrayed, is not real. It's unattainable. And no wonder it has an effect on none of us. Put a young teenager in an awkward stage in life in this social media toxic cult of beauty, and they're going to compare themselves to what is impossible. Now, what's going to happen? They're going to judge themselves. They think the world is judging them. They think their friends are judging them, and then they're judging themselves. They feel unworthy. They're going to try to find meaning and fulfillment and happiness, and it's not there. It's just not there. And so, when we live by faith, we can have wisdom for the storms of life and experience true happiness and contentment in God. Remember C.S. Lewis, he says, if we find ourselves with a desire that nothing in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that we were made for another world. If nothing in this world can fully satisfy or provide happiness, we must have been made for something else. And that's the truth. We were made for something else, something better, something greater. So Solomon, he says, a person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too, I see, is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? To the person who pleases God, God gives wisdom and knowledge and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. We have to get to this place where we can appreciate all the blessings God has given us in this life, but appreciate them for what they are. They're gifts. They're not idols. They're gifts for you to be able to appreciate life and enjoy life and thank God, be thankful in appreciation. So this is why I like, in my New King James Bible, each book has a an introduction. And I like this introduction to Ecclesiastes. Power, popularity, prestige, pleasure, nothing can fill the God-shaped void in man's life but God himself. But seen from God's perspective, life takes on meaning and purpose, causing Solomon to exclaim, "Rejoice, do good, live joyfully, fear God, keep his commandments." Skepticism and despair melt away when life is viewed as a daily gift from God. The point of the book is actually positive. It's actually saying that when you find God, you're going to find what you're looking for. That's the point of the book. You know, did you ever wonder, Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden." Did you ever wonder what Jesus was talking about? He says, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." You are going to be restless, searching, searching, searching for that unattainable dream of happiness. And what happens is it wears us down because we're carrying a burden. And Jesus is saying, "Come to me, all you who are who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Your search is over when you find forgiveness in what Jesus did for us at the cross. So I think of that burden as the burden of guilt, obviously, the burden of guilt and shame from sin. But that's not all. There's a burden there of us trying to find meaning and fulfillment and happiness apart from God. That burden that Solomon ended up being such a burden that he got to the point where he just hated life. Jesus gives life. Jesus gives life. And so he's setting us free from carrying this burden. And you're loved by your Father in heaven. He created you. And that's the beautiful thing about finding God. You're finding your Father in heaven, the one who created you, the one who can make everything right, the one who can set you free. And it happens through forgiveness of sins. Jesus, God sent the greatest gift from heaven. He sent Jesus to die on a cross so that we could be forgiven, so that that debt, that guilt, that shame could be lifted off our backs, and that we could be free. And that's the whole point, for us to be free in him, forgiven, so that now we can praise him and thank him with a life set free by grace. So he did that for us at the cross. And we access that through baptism, but we've got to believe. We've got to repent. We can't keep living in denial. Be baptized, and then to live faithful. And he will give us the crown of life. If we can help in any way, let's stand and sing.